Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet, I climbed down up inside.
Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, you're stuck with me. Of course, you're not really stuck with me, but you certainly can be a part of the program. And the way to do that is give us a call at 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And today's going to be kind of diesel day. Today is diesel. And do you remember that joke about diesel? Do these diesel fit you? How does that joke go, Nate?
I haven't heard that one in a while. That's a tough one.
There's some joke about the word diesel. Yeah, do these, I don't know. Someone will call and tell us. And if it's a dirty joke, we want you to clean it up.
Right.
But it has something to do with diesel, do you? Or they're talking about some pants or something like that. Anyway, Nate from Strictly Diesel is sitting next to me. Nate's been in business in the North Scottsdale, North Phoenix area since.
05.
So yeah. He's got a little gray hair, not as much as I do, but he's got a little.
It's growing in. Teenagers and daily life.
Yeah. Oh, see, I'm out of the teenagers group. Yeah. I'm out of the And have you got a son or daughters? How do they stack
both.
Up? One of each?
Five total.
Okay, so yeah. Boys and girls.
Boys and girls.
And how old is the oldest boy?
21.
20, okay, he's kind of past it.
Yeah.
Okay, but how old are the rest of them?
Two 19-year-olds. 15, just starting to drive, and going to be a freshman next year. So, yeah.
Okay. Now, the 15-year-old that's getting ready to drive, boy or girl?
Girl.
Okay. That's a saving grace. Because the only times I've been ever called out by the cops is because of my son. One night, I got a call from the Highway Patrol that said, "Hi, Mr. Salem." And it happened to be a Highway Patrolman that I had been friends with for 20 years. And he says, "Is your first name Mark?" And I said, "Yes, sir." And he goes, "Hi, this is Skip Fink." I said, "Oh, hi, Skip." And he goes, I want you to come over here to Warner and I-10. And I said, "What's the matter?" He says, "Don't worry about it, nothing." He says, "No one's hurt." And I said, "That doesn't sound good." He says, "You need to come over here." And I said, "Okay." So I go over there, and there's police cars all over and stuff. And I said, "What happened?" He goes, "Well, we caught two cars drag racing." And I said, "Was there a Camaro involved?" And he goes, "Yeah, your boy's over there." So I said, "Well, whatever it takes, you just, you know, do whatever you need to do." And so I'm kind of walking around, and I don't want to go over and talk to him because I'm really mad at him right now.
Right.
So I walk over to Skip, and I say, "Okay, I see the Camaro," but I said, "Who is he racing?" And Skip goes, "That little Honda over there." And I went crazy. I went over to my son, and I said, "So let me get this straight. You get caught for drag racing a 4-cylinder Honda with an IROC?" You know what I mean? What sense is that?
Scratch your head, yeah.
Yeah, that's a scratch your head moment. So the long story is the old IROCs had the PCM with the EEPROM in.
Okay.
And we used to be able to reprogram those EEPROMs.
Oh, yeah.
So I had his EEPROM reprogrammed where the top speed of the car was 46 and the computer would shut the fuel off at 46. So 45 was as fast as he could go. And I did the same thing with the RPM. I think it was 2200 or 2500. If he went past that point, I shut the fuel off for 3 seconds both ways.
Nice.
He couldn't even get on the highway.
Right.
So we went to the court in Chandler, and I said to the judge, "I have a plan. Would you just listen?" I said, "I've restricted his car to 45 miles an hour and 2500 RPM, and I'll leave his car restricted that way as long as..." But it's an 8-point ticket. You lose your license for a year. So I said, "He's never been in trouble before, but this is my fix if you'll go along with it." He says, "Well, I don't believe you." I said, "Well, just here's the keys. Go drive it yourself." So he said, "Well, you come with me." So he gets off the bench, and we go out there, and we drive it around, and he goes, "This is pretty amazing." He says, "It's hard to get out of anybody's way." And I go, "Yeah." So he says, "Well, what do you want?" And I says, "Just tell me what you want." He goes, "I want this in his car for 6 months. And I said, "Okay." And he goes, "Now, what do you want?" And I said, "How about like a 2-point stop sign ticket?" And he goes, "6 months?" He says, "I'll do 9 months for that." And I said, "Okay." So Alan tells the story now. He's 38 years old. He tells the story that, you know, he put four people in the car, and he could hardly get it to move off a traffic light because he couldn't give it more than 2,500 RPM.
Right.
And he says the worst part about that whole situation was is the 3 seconds you shut the fuel down, and then you turned it back on until the speed or the RPM dropped down. He says, Dad, do you know how long 3 seconds is when you're going down the road?
Eternity.
Eternity.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's that. I don't think he's had a ticket since then. But like I said, he's a lot older and a lot smarter. So the girls though, I didn't have any problem with the girls. The girls, I had a lot of problem with the boys they drug home, but I didn't have any problem with the girls. Anyway, so Strictly Diesel up in, give me your location.
We are currently at 7th Avenue, south of Deer Valley Road.
Okay.
So, yep.
And you've been in that area, like you said, since 2005.
2010, actually.
10.
2010.
No, but you started in 2005 in Scottsdale.
Correct.
And then you moved to the Deer Valley facility.
Yep.
So we're going to give you credit for all that. So tell me what you got in the shop today.
What have we got in the shop today? Well, that's quite a bit we got in the shop right now.
Okay.
We're working on Power Strokes, Cummins, 2500s, 3500s, Duramaxes, doing some modifications, daily maintenance and repair.
Okay.
Pretty much anything related to diesel.
Have you got a 6.0 in there where the cab's off of it over to the side?
We don't pull cabs on 6.0s, believe it or not.
Okay.
But, yeah, we got 6.0s with motors out and heads off and, yeah, usual 6.0 repair.
Are you bringing the motor out the front?
Out the top, if we need to.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you're not pulling cabs?
No, we don't pull cabs on those.
Okay.
No.
See, we pull cabs on those. We dropped one the other day, and that cost me a pretty penny.
Yeah.
But no, it's just... And then we put a cab on and off a truck 3 times not too long ago because the tone ring had been hit on the front of the crankshaft,
yep.
And we couldn't sink the cam and crank.
Yep. Seen it.
And finally, we after, you know, you get on the internet and everybody's got an idea.
Oh, yeah.
But we had done most all of that already. And so finally I called the Ford Parts Department and they said, where'd you get your crank? And I said, I got it from a rebuilder. And he says, did you do the run out on it? And I said, yeah, it's like 2000s. He says, take a 10-millimeter Allen head and stick it between the teeth. And he says, see what? And there was 2 teeth that one was wider than the other. He says, you'll never get that straight again.
Uh-uh.
And he says, so I got an $850 crank here. And I said, I'll pick it up in an hour.
Yeah, boat anchor.
So you're doing, like you say, from maintenance all the way through water in the oil. Let's talk about the 6.0.
Water in the oil, yep.
Water in the oil.
Yep. That's, or vice versa.
Or vice versa. Oil in the water. And Fickums.
Fickums.
And that's the fuel injection control module.
Yep.
And that has that takes 12 volts and converts it to 40, 50, 60.
48 volts.
48.
Yep.
But there's some Fickums out there, I guess, that are moving up higher than that.
There are adjustable ones, and others are done in the aftermarket that are 58 volts.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so the FICM, the fuel injection control module, when it goes bad, there's all kinds of codes.
Typically, yes.
And drivability problems.
Oh, yeah, drivability.
And starting problems.
Starting, you bet.
But all of those have a lot of other reasons, too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you can have a miss problem and it not be the FICM.
Exactly.
You can have a hard start, cold or hot, and it's not the FICM.
Right.
So you have lots of symptoms, and a lot of people are just automatically going to the turbo, but in reality, how often when you get a 6.0 in there, compared to all the other 6.0s when they have a drivability problem, how often are you dealing with the turbo?
Believe it or not, not very often.
We're the same way.
Yeah, not very often at all.
Everybody thinks it's the turbo, but it's something completely different almost every time.
Everybody blames the EGR, too, and it's not typically the EGR valve either.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
You're exactly, I agree with you. It's... How many times have you seen a truck come in with a drivability problem with a new turbo on it?
Oh, quite a few.
And they won't admit it. You know?
Right.
Somebody already put a turbo. Where? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to be embarrassed that I just spent $1,200 to have somebody put a new turbo on it because I thought that's what it is. Or the guys on the internet said that that's where it's at.
Or they had somebody put a turbo on it and create
another drivability. Ken is your first caller. Ken.
Yeah.
Another drivability problem with exhaust leaks and what have you because they didn't seat the turbo right.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
All of that kind of stuff can happen. All right. Well, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They've been providing really good automobile, light truck repair, maintenance services to their customers since 1970. They have ASE certified technicians. They do a good job in diagnosing your car, making an estimate appropriate, fixing your car and verifying the fixes there. They are good people. Brian and Thelma own and operate Thompson's Auto Repair. So if you don't have a shop in Mesa, May I suggest you stop by, let them do an oil change, and just see how they treat you. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. Ken, good morning to you. What can we do for you this morning?
Good morning, Mark. Hey, I have a 2013 Duramax. My question is, when it goes through a regen, there's no idiot light. There's nothing to tell you that it actually started a regen. The only way that you know is the RPM goes from 600 to 800 at idle when you're sitting at a light or whatever. Is there a way to add an idiot light, some kind of indicating light, say, okay, hey, I just started the regen, but more importantly, when it's over? Is that even possible?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've been on the hunt to figure out an idiot light per se to make it simple for these trucks. But
I'll tell
you what, Edge Products, which we stock their product and carry it quite often, offers a module that will monitor that for you and actually show it on a TV screen for you in front of you. You can mount it on your windshield or your dash or wherever. And that'll tell you when the process is going on and what's happening. I have it in my 17 Dodge for that specific reason. So,
just so you can monitor
I know when it's going through regen.
The regen, I'll do my best on that. The regen is we have a carbon filter that catches a particulate filter in the exhaust.
Yep.
And its job is to catch, let's just pretend, to catch the gravel that leaves the engine.
Exactly.
Okay. So it's a series of screens, so to speak, and pretty soon it gets really plugged up. So there's either temperature sensors front and back or pressure sensors, sensors front and back. And as soon as the computer sees the pressure on the front side much higher than the pressure on the outside, then it knows the particulate filter is constipated. I'm using
one minute.
You have to do radio. They can't see your
hands. That's good.
So then the computer will then start dumping raw fuel into the exhaust and raise the idle with the intention of let's set fire to all the gravel and let's burn it and send it out the tailpipe.
Exactly.
He's really lucky because on the Fords, it's like, I don't know how many minutes, but it's higher RPM. And they don't want you to have anything that can possibly catch fire within 20 feet of the exhaust.
Right.
And they show pictures on the internet of guys running the regen, and you can manually do that regen.
Yep.
And they do a regen, and they have a big trash can that's 10 feet away, and then they're done, and that trash can's just melted. And it's tremendously hot.
It is.
So what's coming out of the tailpipe is really, really hot.
It is.
Ken, stay right there, because we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to finish our talk with you, and we're going to talk about the Edge, and we're going to talk about what's good and what's bad about the Edge, and really, what benefits does it offer? And then we'll talk about that. So we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We've got Ken on the line, but we've got four lines open, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Today is Diesel Day. Nate from Strictly Diesel is sitting to my right. And if you want to talk about diesels, now's the time. Let me tell you real quick, though, about S&S Tire Service in the West Side. They opened their doors in 1976. They have three locations, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear. So that they got the West Side covered. They offer a huge line of tires in different brands and different sizes. So they have, no matter what you have, you can go in and show them what size you have and what the load range is and what the speed range is, and they can give you a good, better, best number. So if you want the less expensive, the middle of the road, or the very expensive, and that helps you make up your mind on what's best for you. Obviously, you're going to buy the least expensive if you're going to trade it in a year. If you're going to keep it for the next 5 or 10 years, then you probably get something higher than that. But nevertheless, they've got those tires. But they've got tires for your farm equipment, golf equipment, lawn and garden equipment, your ATCs, ATVs, trailers, commercial and construction tires, and they balance your new tires and they do alignment and suspension work. So again, Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear, S&S Tire, West Valley. Just remember that. Okay, Nate, we've got Ken on the line, and let's start with a basic Edge. An Edge is something that's going to sit on your A-pillar or on your dashboard or wherever you want it mounted.
Yes, yes.
Now, will it handle all three diesels, Dodge, the Ford, and the Duramax?
You bet.
And then what does it do to enhance the driver's ability to keep track of his diesel?
Well, on the edge monitor itself, it helps you monitor diesel regenerations when those are going on. It's always best to complete those when they start. It gives you ability to look at common rail fuel pressures, exhaust temperatures in the exhaust system. They do offer a pyrometer option, so you can actually tie that into your manifold and get directly what's coming out of the motor. You can monitor fuel pressure with their adapters. Basically gives you an overall look at what the engine's doing at any time.
And you can actually program anything you want to a number. So if you want coolant sensor number, you can get coolant sensor number.
And they have a kit or an add-on for that if you want to look at certain temperatures on anything.
Okay. So that's like level one.
Yeah.
There's no performance issues, enhancements. That's just kind of a TV screen that gives you the option to look at more things that you want.
Exactly what that's called, a monitor, yep.
Do you know what my wife looks at on mine?
What?
Top speed.
My top speed alarm went off on the way down here, so.
You know, I want to tell you something. She said, I looked at your top speed the other day, and I said, you know, are we ever going to get past this top speed thing?
Right.
And she says, it was 112. And I says, no, it isn't. It's limited at 93.
Right.
She says, no, it was 112. I said, you looked wrong. It was probably, you were looking at kilometers.
Yeah, had to be.
And then she kept arguing with me. I said, you know what? Your son had my truck for 3 days. He was the one that probably did that.
There we go.
Because he was running across 40. And I said, he probably did that. So I think she's happy right now. She's too far away to hear the show. So there's a lot of hidden values, high RPM behind the screen,
yep.
Top speed and all that other stuff.
Yep.
So level two. Level two is?
Level two would be like a programmer
that
ties into the engine and certain sensors on the engine to help modify and give you more power, if you will. It also gives you that same screen that can monitor, again, regens, EGR flow, what have you.
Okay. You know? In a simplistic way, we're going to plug a programmer into the data link underneath the dash.
Yep.
And let's just, in round figures here, there's five levels. Five levels from stock might be two. And Rapid Roy, the race car boy, is five.
Yep.
And so people can pick it. Now, they can't pick it on the fly. They have to stop, shut the key off, plug in the monitor, turn the key on, and go through all the process.
They do have different levels of it for sure. But, yeah, typically it's either a programmer style or push button, depending on which level you buy.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's – you can change – sometimes you can change transmission shift, whether it's later or earlier. Sometimes you can change some other parameters, but most everybody wants a little bit more power.
A little bit more, yeah.
All right. Yep. I use a programmer to change the tire size on my truck so my speedometer's right.
Yep.
So it allows you to change the diameter of the tires.
Edge will also do that too, yep.
Okay. And yep. And the beauty of that is, well, it only took me like 3 weeks to do it because you get down to a quarter of an inch, and I've got a GPS monitor up on the dash so I know exactly how fast. I'm trying to get the edge and my GPS and my speedometer all together.
I want
them all together.
Yep.
I bet it took me 10 hours, and I kept going back to the GPS because I knew it was right.
Right.
So I worked on the speedometer first, and then I got the edge to work.
Yep.
So those are your choices. And then last but not least, you've got an edge that allows you to change on the fly right on this TV screen.
Yep.
So we're gonna put the programmer, so to speak, in the edge, in the television, and now you can do on the fly. So you're driving down the road, and you can be on level two of five.
Exactly.
And you're driving a Duramax, and a Ford passes you.
Right.
And then so you look over, and you push the button a couple of times just to bump up the power a little bit.
There you go. It passed the Ford.
And you don't want to ever attach your edge to the middle of the dash where your wife can touch it, because she'll have the down arrow before you can get over there to the up arrow.
Exactly.
So if it's on the left side of the dash or on the A-pillar, you're better off. All righty, Ken, does that take care of it for you?
It sure does. Okay. And thanks for your info, yeah.
You're welcome, sir. You're welcome.
Jim is your next caller.
All righty, Jim, good morning to you, buddy. How can we help you?
Hi. It's not a diesel question, and hopefully it's pretty simple. I'm trying to get a 93 Lumina with 149,200 miles on it to a smog.
What'd you fail?
Well, I didn't go yet because the service engine light's on.
Okay.
And I did some checking. I have a Chevy manual for the car, and it doesn't throw a code. It doesn't throw a DC 12. It should throw a 12. I checked the connector. It has power at the terminal connector.
Okay, we can't go through this step by step. If you don't have any codes, but you've got a service engine soon light on, you're going to have to deal with that. So somehow or another, you're going to have to find the program or the skill sheet or the paperwork that allows you to appropriately check all the inputs and outputs to the PCM.
And so that's all.
You're going to have to do that. I can't tell you how to do that, nor can I fix your car. Have you checked all the fuses in the car? And if you have, tell me how you checked them.
I checked the fuses and pulled them, looked at them. And with the service manual, if you pull the indicator, the light will go out. Light went out. So, you know, it's either, I heard what you just said, it's either an open to short or something like that in the line, or
1 minute.
It's the computer itself.
Well, I want to tell you something. I hear that all my life, it's the computer, and 99% of the times, it ain't the computer.
Right.
And Nate shaking his head with me. Besides, your guess on that computer is going to be in the $400 to $500 range by the time you buy a PCM and then install the PCM. And if it's a wiring problem, that's not going to fix it. And on top of all of that, you have to have it reprogrammed to your car, and that's $128 just about anywhere in town.
Okay.
So at the end of the day, you are far better off to have somebody go through that. And here's what we would typically do. We would typically find different circuits, and we would go from the ALDO connector to the PCM with a new wire. And checking the fuses like you did is not good enough for me. I want to use a digital volt ohmmeter. I want to touch the both sides of each fuse and see 12 volts, and I'm 10 seconds away from this break. So when we come back, we'll finish talking about this. So, Jim, stay there. 602-508-0960. The lines are open. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Mark Salem and Nate from Strictly Diesel is sitting next to me. He's at Deer Valley on 7th Avenue, and he does foreign and light-duty diesels. And basically, if it doesn't have a little thunder to it, you're really not interested in the Fiats and the Volvos.
Yeah. We'll get into those for sure. No.
All righty. Action Auto's up at I-17 in Deer Valley. He's a family-owned operation. He's a full-service operation. And they've been around since 1983. Whatever your repair art needs, you are, if you visit Tom and his staff. I promise that they've got quality workmanship, and they have good customer service and a fast turnaround time. And his technicians are ASE masters. So that means that they know how to properly do the dance. They diagnose it, then they bid it, and then you okay it, and then they do the work, and then they go verify that whatever they went to fix, they fixed. It's called guessing with your money otherwise, and they don't do that. So Action Auto Repair, again, is an I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. Good guy, good honest guy. Okay, we're going to go back to Jim. Jim, on your check engine light, Nate and I kind of talked about that during the break and stuff. Really and truly, there's some in-depth testing that you have to go, and I would think that you've probably got a ground circuit somewhere, because the light's going to be powered up both on a positive and a negative side, and typically we're using the ground to switch things on and off, and we're not using the 12-volt power.
Uh-huh.
But really and truly, there's shops out there. Where do you live by chance?
Phoenix by Dunlap and I-17.
Okay. I'd probably give Larry Harker's Auto a call. He's at 38th Avenue and Indian School. I know Bob could figure that out for you. I mean,
okay.
I know he could. But Larry Harker's, Bob's the lead technician. Ellen's the lady that's going to answer the phone. I'm quite sure he can figure that out. Now, here, this is one of those things that it's going to cost $167 to find it and 10 cents to fix it. I can't
okay.
be sure of that, but I'd be willing to bet of that.
Right.
So
let me throw in one more piece of information. I heard what you said about the wiring, and I did look up Larry's auto shop down there, 35th and I think Indian School,
uh-huh.
and I think that would be a good place to go. But let me just put in one more information. I heard what you said about the grounding and the wiring. When you drive in the car, the light will go on and off.
Okay.
And hopefully that's an indication that there's an electrical problem somewhere, not necessarily the computer itself.
Well, You're right, but I don't think we're going to chase that. I think once we get on the front, we got two problems. You got problem one and problem two. I think you focus on problem one. That'll probably fix problem two. But if you go to two, then you're going to chase your tail for a little while till you finally stumble across the problem one. So, but it's his job to determine whether we're going to go number one or number two.
Okay.
I would let him make that decision. And your question to him is give me the worst and give me the best. That's what I want from you. Give me the worst and give me the best.
Okay.
All right. And I thank you for calling, Jim. Thank you very much. Chuck, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, hi, good morning. I don't have a diesel question, nothing exotic like that. My window and my driver's door, the bar window, it's intermittent. Sometimes it goes down, won't come up. Sometimes, you know, it's just intermittent. So before I invest in a motor, do you think it's a motor? I mean, if it works partially, or think it's electrical
Two
or
minutes.
What?
Well, I got a couple things.
Sure.
Is it a Ford?
No, it's a Kia. Kia Sorento.
Nate just burst out laughing. He's just shaking his head at me. I'm
okay.
Just teasing you. All right. Number one, the most used by far, 90% of the traffic on the windows comes from the switch you sit next to. So
okay,
that's a negative. But this is what I want you to try, and you're going to laugh at me, but I can't tell you how many times I've done this, and people just sit there with their jaws sitting on the ground.
Okay.
The next time there's a problem with it, I want you to let go of the switch, and I want you to hit the door panel with the bottom of your fist a couple of times. Not enough to cause damage, and I want you to hit it below the center line.
Okay.
I just want you to hit it. I don't know if you can hear this, but what... Okay?
Yeah.
That's
what
I want you to do. Then hit the window. Here's the deal. The brushes at the back of the armature are spring-loaded. And after they get down really small, then there's not a lot of spring tension to hit the armature, which means the motor's not going to work. By you jarring the door panel, if it works every time you do that, then you know it's the motor.
Okay.
And I fixed a Ford up in Payson the other day. He was laughing at me, and he says, I said, I can fix it. Give me a dollar. And he's, I'm not going to give you a dollar until you fix it. And I went out there, and I opened up the door. He turned on the key, and it was a Ford, red Ford. It belonged to Daryl Floyd. I'm even going to snitch him off. It belonged to Daryl Floyd from the Gila County Rescue Division. And I took my fist, and I held the window switch, and I hit the door one time, and the window went up.
Yep.
I took his dollar and walked away. So
Before the problem started, it was funny. When it would go down all the way, it sounded like a pillow fluffing. It sounded like you were fluffing a pillow, and it wouldn't like just stop with no sound like it normally would.
Okay.
Which I don't know what that means, but I had that.
I understand what you're saying, but I'm not sure I'd take that. Now, another thing you can do too is you can open up you keep the let's say you want to bring it up. You put the switch into the up position with your left hand, you open the door and slam it hard. Mm-hmm. And that's the jarring I need to happen. But
okay.
How many miles are on your car?
150,000.
All right. It's either going to be a motor. It's not. We know it's not a regulator because the fact that the window will go up and down intermittently means the regulator's fine. So it's either the motor or the switch, one or the other. And the motor's not bad. The switch is going to cut you off at the knees.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
You
betcha.
And Jerry, you stay right there. You'll be my first caller on the other side. And that means we have four lines open, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We'll be back in 3 minutes. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and I'm here with Nate from Strictly Diesel. Nate's up on Deer Valley Road, 7th Avenue in Deer Valley, just south, right?
Just south.
Oh, not, you know what? It'd be helpful if I turned on your microphone.
Hey,
there you go. And so if you have a diesel question, now's the time, because we got Nate, and we can do car stuff too as well. 602-508-0960. Four lines are open. 602-508-0960. But let me just talk about a guy that I really love, and I'll tell you, you're going to find out in a minute. All right, IMM Auto Service. They work on Volvos, Saabs, Fiats, and Alfa Romeos.
Good for them.
That's what I say.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other day we called them and we said, this is what we got. Every time we turn the steering wheel right, the back windows, one goes up, one goes down. Or it was something similar to that.
Yeah.
It's just silly stupid.
Yeah.
And he goes, go in there and do this and do that and pull that relay out. And if the terminal number 7 is burnt, then just get a new relay. What? He says, that's what you do. Holy mackerel. He was right.
Wow.
I don't remember what the problem was, but it was one of those really weird problems. IMM is in the northeast corner, the quadrant of Tempe, been around since 1972. David is a great guy, and here's what they really do well. No matter what you've got in your garage, whether it's Chevy, Ford, Chrysler, Toyota, Honda, if you've got one of those, they can service it, they can do maintenance on it, and they can fix stuff on that. But they really work well if your garage has a Volvo, Saab, Fiat, or Alfa Romeo. So if you live anywhere close to ASU, IMM Auto Service. But if you have one of those cars that makes the rest of us run, then you really need to go to IMM Auto Service in Tempe. Yeah. Jerry, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning. Thanks a lot for what you do. I think it helps customers and the industry.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Looking forward to it all week. Anyway, my question is about a V6 Honda.
Okay.
The estimate that I have, it bothers me. It's reseal all four rear main cap bolts, oil leaking from rear engine area. It's not urgent. It's just that they're developing a leak, and eventually it's going to show on the garage floor, and that's when I need to get in there and have something done about it. So I understand there are a couple of items that have to be moved out of the way before those four engine rear main bolts can be removed and resealed and reinserted.
Right.
But their estimate is 509 plus taxes and stuff comes to $572.
Yeah. Well, it's important to know that in order to get to that rear main area, you got to separate the engine and the transmission. So, and you don't have to separate them far, but what you do, you got two choices. You can either do it in the car, or you can just drop the cradle that has the engine and transmission in it, just drop it on the ground. Not really on the ground, on four jack stands, and lift the car off of it and then do your work. But both of us are looking at ourselves, and we're both got the same expression on our faces. So let me get this straight. You've been told that you've got a rear main seal leak, and you're going to need work on it. But you know that you haven't seen anything on the ground.
That's correct.
I want to tell you something, and I'm not calling you out on this, Nate, but I don't want you to agree or disagree with me. If one of my guys said that, he'd be in the doghouse so fast, and the second time he said that, he'd be unemployed. You see, here's what's going on. It's true, Nate, there's going to be some weeping and seeping at different places of the engine.
Absolutely.
But they don't generate a spot on the floor.
Right.
And if it's, I mean, here's what I say to the tech. Let's go look at your car. I'm going to put your car on the rack, Billy Bob Joe, and if I find weeping and seeping anywhere, your butt's unemployed.
Right.
So our industry is in shambles right now because it's hard to find work. The new cars are extended their service intervals twice as what they were. So instead of 30, 60, and 90, a lot of it is between 75 and north of 75. We got a lot of cars in warranty. Everybody's got a new car. And so we're just fighting for... I had a guy the other day come in, and he had been told that he needed all kinds of work. One of them was two tie rod ends. He had none of the symptoms. He had no clicking left and right. He had no wandering. He had no tire wear. He had nothing. We put it up on the alignment rack where we're loading up the tie rod ends, and you couldn't move those tie rods in laterally if your life depended on it. And it was an odometer surface, what I called it. They looked at the mileage. It's 120,000 miles. Well, it's got to be tie rod ends. So then we had one that came in with a rack, and there was a $1,300 rack bill. I'm not the hero on this thing. It's just I think people trust us to give them a second opinion. We look at it, and we got a little weeping and seeping on the bellows, but we don't have anything on the ground. And it's got 100,000 miles. We're still 30, 40, 50,000 miles away from a drip on the ground. So I think your $500, I'll tell you what, it kind of bothers me. That's not even 5 hours of labor, and they're going to split the transmission and the engine. I'm kind of scared. Well, let me put it to you this way. There are shops in this valley that would charge you the $550 and do nothing. And say they did what they did.
Oh, sure.
But not do it. I'm not going to cast dispersions on whoever you went to. But if all you've got is their word that you need this rear main cap and rear main seal replaced, I wouldn't do anything till I saw a drip on the ground that's directly in front of the driver, about in the middle of the hood. That's what I'd be looking for. So if you don't have that, then I would just say thank you and no thank you. That's what I would do.
Appreciate it. They did send me an email that explains it. I asked for that and got it.
And that's a great thing. Nate, I tell people all the time, write it down and give me the information. Sign your name and put your phone number on there.
Yeah.
And that's fine because their defense is hey, there's some weeping and seeping going on right there. It's just a matter of degrees. On a 1 to 10 scale, weeping and seeping to me is 1 through 3. We start probably showing a drip every now and then between 4 and 7.
Yep.
And then 7 and north of that, just pretty much every time you park the car, you're going to have a drip.
A puddle or something, yeah.
And not only that is when it starts dripping, then the very first sign you're going to see is as you're moving down the road, the drip, it moves backwards in the air and it curls around behind the car and the rear of the car is going to have some spots of oil on it. And if it's a pickup truck, the tailgate and rear bumper are going to have a little oil on it. So when you see that, then you go, okay, I got a leak. So that's my opinion. I think you should just gracefully pass.
I have so far, a couple of months ago.
Okay.
But it's bothered me all this time thinking that that's a stiff bill for, I don't understand, you know. And I'm not a novice, but they're the only ones that have ever been under the hood. It's got 102,000 miles on it, and it's 11 years old.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with it. You know, just if it's got something on the ground, then you go for it, and if it doesn't, then you don't go for it. So, but thank you, Jerry. Thank you very much. And let me tell you, I can't remember. I had it on the tip of my tongue not too long ago. We looked at a car. Oh, a lady took her car into a transmission shop because she had had a noise.
Right.
The transmission shop says, well, it's gonna cost like $600 for us to figure this out. She says, well, okay. And then they called and they said, you know, I can't figure it out. We're gonna have to take it out. $1,300. And then they get it out and they go, oh, it needs a transmission. $3,500. So she says, no, we started at 600 or whatever it was. And she says, we're going back to that. So they put it all back together, so they said. And they gave her the keys and they charged her a couple $100. And she her boyfriend and I are friends. So he calls me and he says, you want to look at this? And I say, yeah. It's a double overhead cam and it has some little plastic guides. And one of the guides had gone all the way through. So we were having a belt slap at the front of the motor. A belt slap at the front of the motor, which is 3.5 feet away from the transmission.
Wow.
So I said to her, this is what you do from now on. I wanted her to say this. Oh, gosh, I need a transmission. Oh, my God. Well, I can't afford it, but my dad's in Wisconsin. And he says he thinks he knows everything about cars. So this is what I want you to do. I want you to write down on the bill exactly what you're saying to me. Because of this noise, you need a transmission, and the transmission is this much, the labor's this much, and, you know, kind of rough off the sales tax and stuff, and then put your name and your phone number, and here's what's going to happen. I'm going to go home and fax this to my dad, because I'm going to need to borrow some money from him.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to fax it to my dad, and then he's going to loan me the money, and I'm going to come back and have you do it. He wouldn't do any of that. He wouldn't do any of that. He wouldn't do any of that.
That's
so, that's just kind of because if they sign their name to something like that, and then the Attorney General Fraud Division happens to be the people that are in your shop, there's no question your butt's grass.
Right.
There's no question. Anyway, let's talk about the EGR temperature sensor tells us how hot the motor's running. We try not to run above for a sustained period of time. What's the temperature you tell them not to run above?
Exhaust gas temperature. You don't want to be above 1250.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
for an extended length of time.
Extended.
Yeah.
Extended.
Not going to say it's never happened.
A friend of mine was going up from Rye into Payson, that big long grade.
Yeah.
And he was pulling a trailer, and he said to me that the guy next to him was pulling a trailer, so he decided to run. He says, I got my EGTs up to about 1,400. And I said, well, aluminum melts at 1,100. And I says, I run up to 1,400, but just in short spurts. Once you back the throttle off, it'll cool down pretty good.
Yep.
He says, I was there for a good 2 minutes.
Oh.
And I said, well, you run a risk like all the rest of us. But now, the manifold, I want you to picture, the manifold is a straight six. Pretend it's a straight six.
Yes.
We got cylinder one comes out and meets the common exhaust pipe. So you can put the temperature sender in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6, or you can go back another 12 inches and put it right in front of the turbo. So what does where does Nate put them?
We put them on the exhaust manifold, trying to read as many cylinders as possible, because at that point you're getting the hottest temperature of that exhaust.
Okay, now that's at the tail end of six then, because it's you're kind of you're getting all the gases from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, so to speak.
Depends on access to the manifold, depending on the year. Depends on, you know, how that manifold's designed. But, yeah, typically we try and put it where it's going to be hottest.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, depending on access, sometimes you're halfway around the manifold. You're in the middle of the manifold. I understand.
Yep.
It's access. It's you can't get in there to drill and tap that hole.
Right.
So, that's going to talk to the monitor you talked about, which was the edge monitor.
Yes.
Okay. So, we know that. And what that tells you is you're in a red zone, you idiot. And if you continue at this level, you're probably going to melt your motor.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, the stock motors aren't going to do that. We're not going to get those up that high.
You wouldn't think you would, but they do.
But don't you think they're going to back us off or overfuel the engine if we... I mean, I don't know about the programming, but I'm thinking they've got something in there to prevent us from going 13 or 1400 on the...
There's nothing there to prevent that.
Okay.
No, edge monitor tells you it and helps allow you to stay out of that area for sure. So.
But the stock Ford trucks don't have anything that tells you that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a matter of you're on a big, long hill. Maybe you're loaded. Maybe you aren't. You got your foot to the floor. You really can't do that for more than
2 minutes.
It's really not a good idea.
No, definitely not.
All right. Okay, now we're going to talk about cold air induction. Everybody wants to put cold air inside the motor instead of hot air from the engine compartment. Do you sell lots of cold air kits?
Used to.
Okay.
Not as many as we used to. The biggest deal now is, hey, I want some turbo noise. How do you do that? Well, you put in an intake.
Oh, okay.
Because they're not baffled like the factory ones, so you can get some more turbo whine or whatever out of it. It does increase flow.
Okay.
For a DPF truck, is it worth it? Eh, you know, yes and no.
I walked out of Safeway the other day, and he goes, hey, I like your truck. I said, thank you. And he goes, I want a cold air kit. I said, what are you thinking you're going to get out of that? And he goes, I'm told 30 or 40 horse. And I shook my head, too. And I said, no. I said, what year are you talking about? And he says, that one over there. And I walked over and we popped the hood. And it's got the air horn in the front grill and the core support.
Right.
And I said, you're already getting cold air. I mean, you're not getting engine compartment air. You're already cold air. But I want to tell you something. I'd be really surprised at 30 to 40
I would
RPM. I'm thinking more of 5, 6, or 7 or something like that. And I says, and I don't think you ought to get the one that you got to oil the air filter because that becomes a problem. They over-oil the oil. Then we get it all over the mass airflow sensor, and we got all kinds of problems because they dipped in an oil.
Which is interesting because most of the aftermarket air filter manufacturers now offer dry air filters.
Yes.
So they've kind of seen the light, too, as
yeah.
far as that option people want. So
you're exactly right. You're yep. exactly right. Okay, we're going to come back in just a few minutes, and we're going to continue to talk cars and diesel, 660. And you get on first if you say, good morning, Gil. I hope your morning's okay. And he'll say thank you, and then he'll take your name. And he'll move you to the front of the line. Mark Salem and Nate from Strictly Diesel will be back right after this.
Technician Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Nate from... Strictly Diesel. I was looking at my next spot, and I'm sitting there going, Mark, why don't you look where you're supposed to look? So, anyway, I'm just saying to myself, well, my next spot is Harker's. I got to do Harker's. And so I'm thinking, nope, Nate's not from Harker's. Anyway, Nate does Chevys, Fords, and Dodges, diesels. Yep. Nate does fuel tanks, so he can take you somewhere between 30 and 50 gallons and replace your stock tank with a factory tank that sits in the same brackets, because you're using Titan, right?
Titan, yeah.
And then you also do the in-bed tanks. And how big do those get?
Those can get up to 95 gallons if you get the right one, yeah.
And so they're going to have a gasoline nozzle and a hose, and the guys that construction and the farmers use that a lot to fill up their equipment.
Some have it that way, and some have it where it ties into your existing tanks, so... Either way, yeah.
And so you can use that 90 gallons, and are you using a pump or are you gravity feeding into that tank?
There's typically a pump.
Okay.
Yeah, with a module that you see in your dash somewhere that tells you what that level's at versus what the pump's doing versus what's going on. So,
okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And so not only do you work and make them on the performance side, but you do all the maintenance, the brakes, the fluids, the oil changes, and check engine lights, particulate filter diagnosis, all that stuff.
We do all that stuff, yeah.
Okay, daily, bumper to bumper.
We keep them on the road, that's for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Our main bread and butter is taking care of them.
Okay, just bumper to bumper.
Yep,
bumper so they, to bumper. They come in, you do oil leaks,
yep.
cooling systems, water pumps, radiators, air conditioning, all the stuff. To do bumper to bumper. Let's take care of Dennis real quick, and then we'll talk some more. Dennis, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, quick question. I'm looking at buying a Mercedes van, like a 2015. Actually, it would be a motorhome with a 3-liter turbo diesel motor. And when I go online, I see all kinds of horror stories about this engine.
Nate is Nate. I want you to bite your tongue. I want to see blood before you answer the 3-liter Mercedes diesel motorhome class C or class B.
Jack. It'd be a class C, and then just I mean, with very low miles there, I'm seeing all these horror stories about this engine. I can't believe Mercedes would let this go on this long.
I can't believe Mercedes put that little bitty motor in a B-class motorhome is what I can't believe. But go ahead, Nate.
The Internet will drive you crazy, first of all. So take it as a grain of salt what you do read. That motor does have some inherent issues, for what it's worth. They are all fixable. But I guess the best thing to do is get history on service repair on that particular one you're looking at and see where you're at with it.
And I have a slightly different tilt. We all know that Mercedes-Benz parts are somewhat proprietary.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we can get oil filters and fan belts and hoses for it in other markets, but when you start talking about hard parts, then that's proprietary. I've had that question ask me about this Class B motorhome before, and I say to them, if you think that your Lexus cost money to service. If you think your Jaguar costs money to service, it's an issue of access. It's an issue of the motor. It's an issue of where you have to buy your parts. If you were my brother, Dennis, I would say to you, you have to be crazy to consider this as something that you're going to trust to go traveling in, especially if your wife hates walking to the nearest garage.
Thank you. That's all I needed to hear.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much. Yeah. All right. It's not a rap on diesels.
No.
There's a guy named Goody up on Shea Boulevard, Goody's Diesel. He does Mercedes-Benz only. And he's just a wizard with Mercedes. I was talking to him the other day, and he said, well, what are you looking for? And I said, I don't know. I've never had one, but I don't want to pay $100,000 for it. And he goes, I run into them sometimes $5,000, $6,000, $8,000, $10,000, and they're pretty good. He said they got 100,000 miles on it. But you don't want an 05 because between 05 and 08, they got bad suspensions. But in 2008 to 2011 and 12, they're really much better. But then they got air conditioning problems. I mean, he knows chapter and verse for every Mercedes ever made. So after a 10-minute conversation, I said, why don't we just narrow it down?
Right. You know,
what model is really great in a spread of years? And so we had a great conversation. He's just really a smart guy with Mercedes.
Bob is your next caller, Bob.
But he also says, don't send me any more work. He says, I'm so swamped now without you that he says, I don't need you. He says, but don't send me any more work. And I says, well, I'll just tell him you're on Shea somewhere. And that's
nice.
It. Hey, Bob, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Morning, Mark. Hey, I'd like to ask your guest, what does he think about dual filter remote bypass filtration systems on diesel trucks? Does he think it's a cost benefit, or is it not really worth the trouble?
Is this fuel or oil?
Oil, yeah.
Oil filters.
There are a couple systems out there that do add bypass filtration. FS2500 is one of them that I'm thinking of. I think that's an excellent system. What kind of vehicle are you looking to put it on?
On a Ford diesel.
Okay. First and foremost, stick to a very good filter on the factory side. So use the Ford filter on it. I always recommend the Fords. But the FS system will definitely benefit you, in my mind, for the long haul if you're planning on keeping the vehicle. My only comment is, I'm sorry, what was the year again?
A new one. We purchased a brand new 17.
Okay, 17. Do not do extended oil changes. I don't recommend that anymore on the new ones. But the FS will help you filter down that oil much farther than what the factory filter is doing. Now, for what it's worth, the FS system, you can leave that on for 20,000 miles. You don't have to switch that out every 5 or 10, whatever you decide to do your oil changes at. But, yeah, there's a benefit to them. I see the benefit for sure.
Let me ask you a question. What are you telling the Ford guys to change their oil at? 5, 6, 10?
We stick to 5,000. It seems to be the best with these DPF trucks.
Okay.
Yeah.
And are you using the full send, the 540, or the 1540?
We give our customers an option. We have a 540 version. We have a 1540, full synthetic and semi-synthetic.
Okay.
It depends on what the customer wants at that point.
All right. And it's funny you bring up the filter issue, because I'm involved in this filter issue of... And most automotive filters are 20 to 40 microns. Do you know what a micron is?
I've never seen one, but
you
yeah.
can't. You know what measures a micron? Is a particle of cigarette smoke is
wow.
1 micron. Now, let me give you the real 1 micron, you take 39 inches, which is a meter, and you divide it into a million. A million,
yeah,
okay?
Crazy.
So, you take this piece of paper. See this piece of paper right here? Horizontal now. It's horizontal in front of you.
Right.
I want you to take a razor blade and cut that piece of paper into 4 different pieces of paper. Each one of those, the thickness of each one of those is 20 microns.
Wow.
So when you look at the microns, 20 to 40 is pretty doggone good.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything gets by the 20, then, you know, whatever. But when you start talking about the gas variety... They're going down to 10 and maybe even a little lower, but nobody's going to 5 or 0 because the filter's not going to last that long. And all we're trying to do is just keep the trash that's not going to circulate that's big enough. And so now we have a situation where we have these small pieces that are 19 microns big that are going to get past the filter. So 19 microns is about the thickness of a piece of paper and a half.
Right.
Or 19 microns might be a thick hair off your beard. So, you know, you kind of wonder where do we go? My problem is that when we filter too deep, then we shorten up the oil change interval because we got a filter that's stacked a little heavier than normal. That's why I like those FTs, because you have the extra filtration.
Yeah.
So it's a little longer.
Yeah.
The 1540 on the synthetic side, I think we're between 8 and 10 on the synthetic side, but we insist that they check it every once in a while because they have a bad habit of not doing that.
Yeah.
Ours is not a semi-synthetic, so the 1540 is just a conventional. So it's got a 5 or 6, get ready, we change the oil. So we do the sticker at 5 or 6.
Yep.
So we're right along the same side as you are.
Yep.
So... Is he gonna have a warranty issue if he changes the filtration on his 2017?
To extend the length?
No, change the filter system.
No, he won't have a warranty issue, not on that, no.
Okay, because
no.
That's always going to be an issue.
Keeping in mind that it's not the particular system we're talking about is taking a small sample of oil that's being driven pressure-wise in a 3/8 line. It's not taking straight shot of oil from the base oil filter, you know.
Okay.
So
you're just running a small amount of filter around the stock filter.
Bypassing it, yeah.
Bypassing it.
Yeah.
So he still has the stock filter in there. That makes it easy.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And the reason I brought that up is this reason. Not too long ago, a shop told me that the aftermarket warranty, he called the aftermarket warranty for a water pump. And the guy came out and he says, yes, the water pump's leaking and it is covered. And he says, but I need all the maintenance records for the car. So the shop gave him the maintenance records. And he goes, well, she didn't have a transmission service done, and she was due for that, so I'm going to have to back out of the warranty. That's the truth.
Wow.
So the question really becomes, wait a minute. What has the transmission service got to do with the water pump? Well, you know, how are that related? Then not too long ago on a Ford truck, this had a Ford truck that had a shift problem all of a sudden. So he took it in, and they said, no, you've put bigger tires on it. And he goes, well, what's the matter with it? And they go, we don't know, but you got bigger tires. So his dad hires an attorney. So then they call me and I say, look, you got to get it fixed first. We got to know what it is, because it could be him. It could be him out there romping and stomping his Ford truck.
Right.
So they take the pan off and they find some solenoid that's come loose. And the bolt that holds it is in the pan. So they bolt it back up and the problem is solved. But the attorney's not happy with the pass of the dealership.
Right.
So now they have negotiations, and evidently he's been made whole. But those are the kinds of issues I run into almost every day of my life is we're voiding your warranty, not dealers, but just about anybody who sold something. We're voiding your warranty because of this, this, and this, and there has to be a relationship.
Right.
It's difficult to say otherwise.
Absolutely.
602-508-0960.
Bob, you know what? We're going to take Bob real quick. Bob, how you doing? What can we do for you?
You just spoke with Bob.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay, all righty. Spoke with Bob about the...
Bob, did that answer your question?
Yeah, it did, but he said 17 Ford.
That's
and,
right.
And extra filter.
Yeah.
All right, you know, I didn't write it down, and that's why I went back to Bob. So just when you know I'm going to make a mistake, you just reach over and hit me on the head, okay?
Yeah, sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. 1116, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, the lines are wide open. There's five of them. So if you have a car question, Nate from Strictly Diesel sitting to my right. And Nate works on diesel. So if you have a question about should I buy a Dodge or a Ford or a Chevrolet.
We don't have enough time for that, do we?
I know. But in reality, we can kind of touch base on the good and the bad of all of them.
Oh, sure.
I'm a real fan of the Duramax. I like the V8. But I think the reason I like the General Motors Duramax, although I don't drive one anymore, is the Allison transmission.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a bulletproof transmission.
Very nice.
And the Dodge hasn't exactly been in the A-list for transmissions in their diesels.
No.
So, and then you got the Ford with the EGR cooler and the oil cooler and the Ficam and all that other stuff. So each one of them has an ugly spot in their history.
They all do.
Yeah. So you just have
to
deal with it.
Yep.
All right, we're talking about Larry Harker's Auto just last hour. Larry Harker's Auto is a place on 38th Avenue in Indian School. He really does a good job. But Bob, more important than anything else, is a great diagnostician. And you just have to walk in there and you have to open your conversation. If Ellen lets you talk to Bob, he's usually out in the shop working on cars. And you say to Bob, nobody else can fix this, and I'm told that you can't either. And that's kind of like waving the flag in front of the bull. So Bob will fix your car. I sent him a Dodge the other day with two really strange problems, and he fixed both of them. So I was pretty proud of him, and the customer was doggone happy. So no matter where you live, if you want one of the best diagnosticians that this valley has to offer, if it's a gasoline car, then I would probably drive it over to Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Okay, during the break we were talking about a whole bunch of different stuff, but let's talk about the Ford, the Chevy, and the Ford Chevy and the Dodge. What do you like about the Chevy, the GM?
The Chevys have come a long way. The body style is gorgeous at this point. The motor is amazing. And like you say, the Allison, you just can't beat it. So, interior-wise, I'm still on the Chevy. That's my personal opinion and only mine, you know.
I agree with you. Now, the King's Ranch on the Ford is as close as I got to buying one.
Yeah.
That King's Ranch leather interior was cowboy clear through and through.
Right.
Until they came out with the Longhorn on the Dodge.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why I bought the new Dodge.
Yeah.
I agree with you 100%. Now, that Duramax hasn't always been a beautiful truck.
No, and
the motor hasn't always been great.
No, definitely not. No, they had their issues.
They had head gasket issues early on, in the very early ones.
Cylinder head problems, injector issues.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
Yeah.
How about the circuit board below the fuse panel where you chase your tails on injectors? Has that happened to you?
Oh, yeah.
So you look at the codes. Now, this is the internet issue. And remind me, I'm going back to the internet because okay. I got a real burn my saddle about the internet.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
So you put an N6 injector, and then within a day, 7 is bad, or 2 is bad, or 1 is bad, or 8 is bad. So you go, okay, well, I just missed it. So you put 8 in. But anyway, you end up circling your tail, and you put 4 brand new ones in, and you still got codes.
Yeah.
You got codes on top of codes that you just replaced. So you go, what do you do? So it took us 2 years, and then finally, one of the dealership guys called us and said, we just figured it out. We, not the dealership, but
right.
The group.
Right.
He says it's the circuit board below the it's got a crack in the ground circuits of the injectors, and the circuit board below the fuse panel is bad. He says, next time you do that, replace it. And I said, well, I'm going to replace it on my truck because I had a 2005. So I did. Injector problems went away.
Wow.
So it that was kind of bad, but that's not something that continues. But when you look at the King's Ranch on the Ford, the interior of the King's Ranch, and you look at that Longhorn on the Dodge, Chevrolet looks like a 65 VW.
Pretty much, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so air conditioning on all three?
They all have electronic cooling fans now, so depending on what light you're sitting at and how long you are, I think they all have AC issues anymore. They okay. don't stay ice cold like they used to, so
they're not moving through the air.
Right.
We don't have any airflow across that stupid condenser in the front.
Yeah.
That's kind of inherent by the grill design, and
that
I know
too, yeah.
mine, there's a 4,000 bugs that live in my grill,
right.
and so I have to do a little bit of work on that. So air conditioning's a wash, right?
Oh, yeah, it's a wash.
Transmission. Let's talk about the transmission. Which one you like the best? Which one you think is the most durable?
That's a good question right now. Man, Ford has done an excellent job with their trans, even though some people don't like the electronics mm-hmm. involved with it.
Yep.
Ford transes are really hard to beat. The Allison, obviously, is a good one. My Dodge has the Iazin in it. Depending on what mood I'm in, I like it or I hate it. So
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Do you know what drives me crazy about it? The son of a gun goes into sixth gear at 35 miles an hour,
right.
and that drone drives me crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Alan figured out the other day, he had something, and he tried to reprogram mine to take it out until 45 or 55. But
okay.
he did it on his, but his is a 2008, and it wouldn't work on mine.
Hmm.
But I drove his, and it was beautiful.
Right.
So both of us are running, I think, 14-inch all the way from the turbocharger. I don't know, but it's a big pipe. And it's running over the axle and then just goes straight down.
Okay.
So it's kind of tucked underneath there, but it's
right.
it's a 3.5-4-inch pipe.
Yep.
But the drone is just crazy.
Yeah.
Just crazy bad. So the unless you hit your button on the shifter and drop it down to fourth, or unless you push the tow haul button or the brake button, you're just going to have that drone, and it drives me crazy.
Inline six, always inherent drone
yeah.
with the exhaust system. Yep.
So, all right. So, any other issues? Tires, brakes?
My Dodge, I can't stand how it wears tires, but you're dealing with a 9,000-pound truck. It's going to do something, right?
Are you on the outside edge of both fronts?
Yeah.
Do you know how many times I've aligned? I'm happy to hear you say that. You know how many times I've aligned my truck? You look at toe in and toe out, and then you look at camber, and it certainly isn't going to be caster.
Right.
And I've cross-rotated the tires. I brought them front to back, and there's nothing I can do to get those front tires not to be obviously worn on the outside edge and evenly.
Right, right.
There's nothing. Now, is yours a dually?
No.
Okay.
Single.
See, yours is easy to rotate the tires. Mine involves a bunch more with a dually because I got to be swapping tires. And so these tires are 62,000 miles old. And I told Alan the other day, order me another. I'm happy with the traction. I'm happy with everything. But I said to him, we're going to do at least two rotations in 65,000 miles if I go that far.
Yeah.
Because I need to be able to. And the only reason I'm really replacing them is the backs are nice and square, but I'm down to the wear bars. But the outside edge of both fronts, I've never been able to not get them to. And I'm not saying aggressively. Would you agree with me?
No, not aggressively. No.
It's just obviously.
It's obvious, yeah.
It's just by sight.
You look at the tire and it drives you nuts because why do you have outside tire wear?
Exactly.
No, there's no reason for it. So.
And the only thing I can think of is it might have aggressive caster in it. I don't know what the spec is, but if it leans over to the right too far, and Fords have that 4 and 5 and 6 degree caster on a lot of their vans.
Yep.
So when you lay those tires on a hard right turn, it actually lays on the outside edge of the tire.
Right.
But the key there is even wear. That's the key,
yep.
right?
Yep.
So if it's even wear, it's typically not going to be caster. And if it's off, and if it's just one side or the other, it could be that you have a split on caster. So this one's 2 degrees and this one's 4 degrees, and you can see that.
Right.
But any Ford van and a lot of the Ford trucks just have too much caster. But we can explain that. But when I go in and set the caster to the high and the low of the window, I still can't knock that outside wear off.
Exactly.
Okay. How about anything else? Suspension, shocks.
They all ride much better than they used to. That's for darn sure. They've come a long way. There's. You know, you're driving an oversized car now
because
of how nice they ride.
Yeah. And how about when are you starting to do drag links and idler arms and tie rod ends and center links?
Depends on the customer's usage. If they're in a dirt road all the time, it's maybe 30,000. If they're, city traffic, what have you, maybe 40,000, depending on the potholes they hit.
But, yeah.
You know.
It's kind of what kind of road warrior is driving that truck.
Exactly.
And where is it at?
Exactly.
Well, I know the guys moved my air pressure to 70 pounds, and I'm not happy.
No.
It doesn't ride good at 70 pounds. And I think they were trying to wear the center out of the front tires by overinflating. They didn't go past the standard rate or, the maximum inflation.
Right.
But they took me to 70, and I'm not happy. So even with my rifle riding on the hood, it still is too rough. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. And I'm going to say it one more time. If you don't call in, I'm coming to your house. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour at 11 o'clock. Keith and Larry have taken my word of warning. I'm coming to your house if you don't call in. So you guys just stay right there because I'm going to be with you in about 30 seconds. So I want to talk real quick about automatic transmission exchange. Phil is one of the oldest shops on my list and probably one of the oldest shops in Phoenix that's under the same management and the same ownership. Admittedly, there's been a family generation change, but Phil's been open at Automatic Transmission Exchange since 1968. He does automatics. He knows how to diagnose them. He knows how to fix them. He says he rebuilds probably a third of them because they need rebuilt. But he says you can fix a lot of them by replacing a solenoid or fixing a valve body or doing some other stuff. So he's at 40th Street in Washington. He's open Saturday from 8 to 12. That way you can stop by on Saturday. If you can duplicate the problem, now's the time to grab one of Phil's guys or Phil and take him with you and show him what's going on. Because that's the most important part of the diagnostic process is figuring out how to make it happen. So don't forget, if anywhere in Phoenix, Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. Let's go grab the calls. Keith, you're first. How can I help you?
Hi. Heard your show for the first time today, sitting here enjoying it.
Thank you.
I have a something that's a little unusual. Your other guest there with a diesel truck probably laugh at this one. I bought a 2016 Dodge one-ton dually, but I wanted a gas engine. I didn't want a diesel. And I tow a 38-foot travel trailer with it, real big. Biggest travel trailer, not a fifth wheel, tongue trailer.
Okay.
Biggest travel trailer you can get without going to a what they call park models or destination trailers.
Okay.
So it's 9,900 pounds dry, and then you put another 1,015 with what you're hauling a little water and food and clothes and all that, probably up another 1,500 pounds, pop two passengers in the truck, and we're going on vacation. So we're pulling like 11.5 maybe.
Okay.
Total weight. And the truck's got a 410 rear end. It's a regular cab, single cab. I didn't want to do a extended or crew cab with a full-length bed because my driveway won't hold it. The truck could hang off into our sidewalk where I live.
Okay.
So I want. So it's a regular cab, gas engine, 6.4. And my question is, when I'm towing with that amount of weight, 16.5 is the tow capacity max, what I've been doing is I'll put it in tow haul mode, get up to about 55, and then I take it out of tow haul mode because then it'll shift into fifth, unless I'm going up a hill, and then I'll leave it in tow haul mode. But I'm wondering, am I overstraining or overworking that with that weight? It normally in tow haul mode, it doesn't want to ever go into fifth, really, very rarely, unless you're going down a hill. It wants to stay in fourth gear.
Okay, all right. What do you think?
Am I overworking it, taking it out of tow haul on the highway and slowing the engine down and towing in fifth with that amount of weight?
Oh, hang on a minute. Okay, go.
Hey, there we are. Hey, knowing the terrain that Arizona holds, I would say leave it in tow haul mode, depending on the situation. The only place that I could see you taking it out would be from here to Yuma, per se.
Yeah.
Or possibly even, Flagstaff east to New Mexico where it's nice and flat. But letting that motor breathe and keeping it in fourth, I think, is the best option, especially to save the trans for the long run. So.
And the tow haul mode raises the pressure and elongates
the
shift. And I don't agree with you popping it out of a tow haul and letting it go to fifth. What you want to do is you want to avoid the hunting. That's what you want to do, because that's where the fuel's going to get overheated. And so whatever you have to do, you've got a red line. That engine will handle the red line. Tuck yourself underneath that red line, 500, 1,000 RPM. Find the gear you like and climb that hill. Heck, set the cruise control and let it climb the hill. I don't want it to shift. And if you like fifth gear, then just bring your RPMs up to fifth gear and just go ahead and pull. But if you're close to on the floor, and then all of a sudden it shifts down to fourth, then you should have been in fourth anyway.
Yep.
So that's how I would do it. The problem you're going to have is you're going to overheat that transmission if you let it hunt. And with the kind of load you're carrying, that's going to be devastating. So I'd continue to smell the fluid. I'd watch my transmission temperature. And that's what I'd do. But anyway, Keith, thank you very much. Thank you very much. I got to get to Larry. Larry, good morning. How are you today?
Hi, good morning. I've got an 89 Honda Prelude, and the odometer and speedometer quit working. And what's involved, or is the odometer repairable? Or
well, I don't know if it's electronic or not. I think it's a cable.
Right. It's not electronic. It's the older style.
Is the cable spinning?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, that's the first thing I think is a diagnostic thing I'd want to do is I'd want to get underneath the dash there and disconnect the cable and get it up on a hoist and spin them front tires and see if the cable's moving. Then I'd put my fingers on the cable, and if I could stop the cable from moving, then obviously there's a defect somewhere in the cable because I should not be able to stop it with my fingers at 10 or 15 miles an hour. But if you find out that the cable is working, then the head's going to be bad, and you got two choices. You can go to junkyard and get another one, or you can go over to Dick's Speedo and Tack, which is 7th Street north of Indian School. And he's been around since Jesus was a baby, and he knows those kinds of cars, and he knows all that kind of stuff. And if he can't fix it, he'll tell you what to do and where to go. But that's who I send my speedometer work to.
Okay, an odometer also?
Yes, he'll do both. And if you buy a used one, what you have to do is you have to put a tag on the door that says I changed, you know, the mileage at the change was 79 and the new mileage was 62. And that's what you're going to do is you're going to put some kind of a long-lasting tag on the door to tell you that difference. So when you go to sell it, then the people will know what the mileage is. So that's all you have to do.
I see. All right. All right, real good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And the lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour, and we're going to talk about Air Park Auto Service, and then we got callers. Air Park Auto Service is up in Scottsdale at the Air Park. They're located on Raintree just east of Hayden, and Raintree is 4 or 5 blocks south of Frank Lloyd Wright, which is really Bell Road. Air Park Auto started in 1985. Nadine and Stacy were friends of myself and my wife Renee, and we all opened about the same time. Stacy died a few years ago, and Nadine's still running the store. And I want to tell you, she knows right from wrong, she knows cars, and she knows enough to look at a technician in the eye and say, maybe you want to rethink that. So you have a friend at Air Park Auto, and Nadine and her staff are going to treat you fairly. So if you live in North Scottsdale, it's the only North Scottsdale facility that's on my list of the best car repair shops in the valley. Let's go to the phones. David, you're up first.
Hey, good morning. That led a question of swapping from a gas motor to a diesel.
We can handle that for you real quick. That's a really bad idea.
Very expensive.
Very expensive. Very, very expensive. You have to change everything. And you have to change the transmission, because you're not going to put a gas transmission behind a diesel. You have to change the fuel system. You have to change the cooling system. You have to change the air conditioning system. And it's not as easy as buying a car like yours or a truck like yours, and then you buy a junkyard car and you put them side by side and you put them together. It's not that easy. So I want to tell you that we started doing the V8 diesel in the GM cars way back in the late 70s and early 80s. And we did two of those, and I've regretted it ever since, because I've never lost so much money in my life. So we took out the 350, and then we did the other way around, too, because the Oldsmobile had that 350 diesel, that V8 diesel, and then we take that out and put gas in there. It was just a miserable thing. Right. So David, I would avoid that no matter what.
Yeah, because Cummins has come out with that new four-cylinder retrofit diesel.
I understand, but you're going to be part of their research and development by trying to convert that, because it's going to take 3 or 4 years for everybody to understand how that conversion needs to happen. And not only that, it's an economic issue. You've got to buy a whole bunch of stuff to make that conversion. So both of us are still shaking our head. I'm sorry. All right.
It's okay. It was a question.
Okay. Thank you, David. Thank you very much. Charlie, you're up next. How can we help you?
Let's see, what do we got? I got a 95 F-250 with a 7.3 turbo.
Okay.
I got an oil leak down where the dipstick goes into the pan. I've heard there's a part that is available and it's supposed to correct all that. Is that correct?
That is correct. You're actually talking to the people that make it. So there is a dipstick adapter available for that motor. It does not require engine removal. It's really a pretty slick setup. I'd encourage you to go to strictlydiesel.com and check it out.
How much is it?
How much is it?
It's a lot cheaper than $3,000, that's for sure.
Okay.
I'm sorry, the price escapes me at the moment, but if you go to the website, they're definitely on there. Type in adapter in the search field, and it'll pop up for you.
Okay, now is that a definite fix? So that it goes on there, and not going to have that leak anymore?
Correct. This adapter will replace what's there currently. And the good news about our adapter is it is serviceable. It does have replacement O-rings if you ever need to in the future have a leak. But, yes, we sell hundreds of these by the week, believe it or not, and they fix every one of them. So as long as your leak is at the dipstick where it goes into the pan, yes, it will fix that.
And something else too, I would trust his judgment, but that 7.3, the guys with the 7.3 can almost sell those trucks for as much as they paid for them way back when.
Absolutely.
And so if both of us would give you advice, you ought to hang on to that monster, because Ford's not made a monster like that in a long time. But
for what it's worth, the silicone is drying up on these trucks, so they are starting to leak from the pan where it meets the block. So take that as advice, too. So it does require engine removal at that point. But, the dipstick adapter does fix that leak currently.
All right. Thank you very much.
Right. Good enough, sir. Charlie. Thank you very much. Steve, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi. I've got the same engine, only in a 2001 F-250 short bed that I pull 12,000 pounds with. That's about all I use the truck for. A little bit tired of two things. One, climbing the boogie on rim, about 42-45 miles an hour max is all I can pull. I have standard exhaust on it.
Okay.
And two, it happened once going into a little town in Colorado where I could not stop the damn thing. I finally did get it stopped, obviously, but it scared the dickens out of everybody. I've got aftermarket brakes, slotted Power Master, I believe they are. Since then, I've obviously taken very easy. But the two questions are, one, what can I do that, one thing to increase the power, and two, to stop the thing again.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to change his question. Knowing what I'm hauling and what I'm driving, give me the range climbing up the rim. We're at 6% grade, so we're either from Rye to Payson, from Payson to Heber, either way.
Yeah.
What speed would you expect him to be? What parameters would you expect him to be?
What speed? Yeah, between 45 and 60.
And I agree with that. Nothing on it, with no performance modifications on it, 45 is a proud number. And you're hauling 12,000 pounds, you said.
Yes.
Okay.
That's up there for that truck.
Yeah, that's right at the limit of 20,000 pounds combined.
Yeah.
Steve, how long has it been since you've had the truck looked at by someone who knows that motor?
Quite a while.
Okay.
I had a short in the injector harness up in Montana that was repaired at a Ford dealership, but I guess they were the last people who looked at it. They were just fixing it, as far as I know.
Okay, what are you thinking?
Well, before you do any kind of performance upgrades on that truck, just because of the age of the vehicle, I'd recommend you get it checked out by us or someone who knows that motor. you'd be surprised how much we improve the performance by, hey, oh, by the way, you got an exhaust leak, or hey, you got a boost leak and you don't know it, you know.
Okay.
Obviously, we improve speed up the mountain at that point. We improve towing. We improve everything. So, yeah, I would have that truck professionally looked at first before I even recommend performance add-ons, because you shoot yourself in the foot and then try and run. Why, you know, that'd be what we'd be doing. As far as the truck not stopping, that's curious to me. Between power steering pump and that HydroBoost assembly, if that's the same age as the truck, you may want to get those two items looked at for sure.
They shouldn't be leaking. Neither one of them should be leaking.
Yeah, shouldn't be leaking. You'd be surprised what we can do with the power steering flush just to free up debris and what have you in both those areas.
Okay.
And then maybe even for what it's worth, if you've had the brake system bled, brake fluid.
I bled them when I put the new brakes on. I put them all around.
Okay.
I rebuilt the cylinders. The way it acts now when it breaks, as I've been driving it recently without any load, it seems to be squirrely. If I hit the brakes slightly hard, it wants to go left and right.
Okay, well, and the brakes left and right, then it's a caliper issue. And so more than likely, you're going to have abnormal wear on the two pads on one side or the other. And the outside pad is a hardware problem. The inside pad is a caliper problem. So I got to move on, but I agree with you 100% about that power steering flush. But you have to understand that we're using the power steering pump to give you power brakes. If you didn't have power brakes, then it's going to be the fan belt, the pump, or the HydroBoost, yes?
Yep.
And I like the idea of not spending thousands of dollars on modifications if you can fix turbo leaks and intake leaks and all that kind of stuff first. He's likely to get more out of that, and it's a more permanent.
Right.
But if you don't have it, then the modifications, just give them the menu.
We can help you all the way around. But, yeah, let's get that truck looked at first to make sure we're pointing you in the right direction.
All righty, we're going to go to Mark now. Mark, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Question about a 2012 Acadia.
Okay.
Just had the oil and filter changed today at the dealership, and they're telling me my Acadia with 83,000 miles has excessively dirty brake fluid, and they recommend it a change for $129.
Okay.
Your thoughts?
If your brake fluid looks like coffee, not tea, but coffee. Okay. First of all, there's a scientific way for us to test your brake fluid, and we're looking for moisture content. So it's pretty simple if you have the right equipment, which costs, what, $30, a hydrometer?
Yeah.
So, you know, you go to somebody and you say, hey, the limit's 3 and you're at, you know, 17. We need to change it. But everybody else is using their eyeballs. So here's the bad news. Even after you flush it, within a month after you flush it, as we circulate the fluid, it's going to pick up some of the trash in the calipers all the way around, and it's going to still have a tea color. So the customer goes back and says, you didn't do a good job, and the shop says, yes, I did, I promise. And they said, well, why does it look like it does now, and it looked like that before? That's exactly why I draw the line between tea and coffee. If it looks like coffee, I agree with them, and that is a fair price. If it looks like tea, I'd probably pass.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right. You betcha. And let's go to Raphael. Raphael, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Yeah, thank you much for taking my call. I'm kind of desperate for good car advice. I have a 96 Mitsubishi 3000 GT at a standard transmission with front-wheel drive. I took it to the transmission shop for a problem. They told me the front seal leaked onto the clutch, which took it out. And after 3 weeks, I got it back. And after driving for a few days, it died on me totally, no gears or nothing. So I paid for towing back to the shop. They told me the rear motor mount was bad, which when the engine lifted up, it pulled out the splines a little bit, and so therefore it wouldn't move. So I had that all done, and again, after driving it a few more days, the same thing happened where I got no more gears. So I'm getting ready to take it back Monday again. And I'm wondering what should I expect from them? Should I pay for towing? Does this fall on them?
Well, you got to figure out what's the matter with it. But have you ever heard of a rear motor mount breaking and pulling the axle out of the spline? That doesn't. Neither one of us knows. I mean, is it a front wheel drive?
Yes.
Okay. So We've never heard that happen. If the bell housing is attached to the back of the motor, then there's nothing spline that come out of it. Now, if the axle comes out of the transaxle, but that's going to cause such a noise that you would have heard that. And the tire is connected to the axle, so if it comes out of the transaxle, it's going to whip that axle around. It's going to make a heck of a noise. So, I don't know.
The motor mounts just don't go bad either, so for what that's worth, it had to have been going bad when they had it out the first time.
Yeah, and that's another question, why? I think maybe you have somebody else look at it first. A look like that may cost you less than $50, but I would have somebody else look at it first. What part of town are you in?
I'm in Glendale.
Okay. Why don't you take it by Mike's Auto Tech? Mike's Auto Tech's at 67th Avenue South and Northern. Are you close to the I-17?
No, I'm pretty close to what you just said.
Okay. Take Mike's Auto Tech, I'd have him look at it and see what he says. Just tell him. I just want you to look at it. I've got an issue with another shop. Tell me what's going on right now. What you're telling us doesn't make a lot of sense, but we're only hearing your side of the story, so that's the best I can do. Anybody else that wants to continue this conversation, mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. And I want to tell you something, Nate, that I ran into. There's been a lot of General Motors dealerships that are telling their customers that there's a special oil they must use called Dexos. And this Dexos is only available at the dealer, and you can't get it anywhere else. Folks, none of that is true. Dexos is a line in the sand, and the Chevron oil I pour, and many of the Valvolines and the Castrolas and the Unions, all are Dexos certified, so they have met the requirement of Dexos. So we've marked all of our oils, and like most other shops, they're doing the same thing. So when you're told that you have to return to the dealership for an oil change because no one else has Dexos, and Dexos is a GM proprietary name, the only thing that's true in that is Dexos does belong to General Motors. But the certification has been sold, as long as you pass the certification, everybody else has got it on their bottles. So you wouldn't be dealing with that at all, but we deal with that a lot.
Yeah.
Nate's from Strictly Diesel. He's up on Deer Valley and 7th Avenue. If you have a Ford, Chevy, or Dodge, Nate does all the work. He does modifications, maintenance, service, gas tanks, exhaust, cold air kits. Help me out here.
Oh, yeah. You need something done to your truck, come see us. We can probably handle it.
And so bumper to bumper, top to bottom.
Yeah.
That's really what it is. Bumper to bumper and top to bottom.
Yep.
So it's a good place. I'll see you next week right here on 960. I'm Mark Salem. And again, my email is mark@marksalem.com.